Hi everyone, welcome to this week's episode of Respectfully Disagree. In the past week, unfortunately, just like we did in July 2021 with Surli Deals, there was a similar incident with Bully Bhai, whereby once again, Muslim women with public personas were auctioned online on web pages. And in the wake of that, there were a lot of debates on social media around the issue of allyship when something like this comes up and what it means to be a good ally at such a time. So in this week's episode, we're actually going to break down that idea and where some of those debates come from. So to start off with, let's ask everybody, is there such a thing as a good ally?
Hi, this is Rohita. I don't think there is such a thing as a good ally. There is such a thing as standing in solidarity, but not being an ally.
Yeah, it's Carla, and I agree with Rohita. And I think one of the main reasons that I sort of don't believe in this notion of allyship is that just that name itself, like giving it this sort of badge that people wear, automatically makes it about the ally themselves and not about the person or the community that they're standing in solidarity with.
Yeah, I would disagree in the sense that I know there's a lot of performativity to it, but I do think that there is such a thing as good allyship. So to start off with, we're going to do a little exercise, as our regular listeners know we are prone to doing, where we're just going to throw out a few examples. I'm just going to throw out a few examples and see what everybody feels about them. And through that, maybe break down some of this debate or disagreement that we clearly have about allyship. So to start off with, the Not In My Name protests. So these happened maybe 4 or 5 years ago, where there was a whole protest, mostly led by upper caste activists about, and it was called the Not In My Name protest, where upper caste Hindus protested mob lynching of Muslims in the country. I mean, by and large, there were also other groups, but it was kind of led by upper caste Hindus. So is that an example of good allyship?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's just making the whole thing about themselves.
I don't know, Rosa, I might disagree with you on this one. I think it's okay. I don't mind it. It's public. It draws attention to the issue. There's no one person sort of claiming the stage or the spotlight for themselves. It's a group of people standing up and saying, we as a group condemn these acts. I don't mind it. I think it's okay.
But I don't know, like, if you're not standing with somebody and you're just making a protest that, like, by its name itself comprises just the privileged group expressing their views or their dissent against something happening to another group. I mean, just basically it sort of separates the two. It's different from, like, standing in solidarity at a protest that is led by people who are directly affected.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I actually think we're on the same page that there is no such thing as, like, perfect allyship. It doesn't exist. But if we think about it on a bit of a spectrum, then I think this is much better than some other forms of purported allyship. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, just to take a completely different example in a totally different context of allyship, right? So in the 20th century, one century ago, there was this club called Mugambo, which was a famous nightclub, and they were not allowing Ella Fitzgerald to perform. I mean, for multiple reasons. The fact that she was black was a part of it, but also apparently the fact that she was quote-unquote overweight and not, like, glamorous, not the right kind of jazz singer, was another aspect of why she wasn't allowed to perform. And Marilyn Monroe apparently promised to sit in the front row at that jazz club every night if they allowed Ella Fitzgerald to perform. And I think ultimately they did, and having that on her resume, like, you know, played a big role in, like, advancing her career and not having to, like, perform in small clubs and stuff like that. So do you think that is an example of, like, good allyship?
It's definitely strategic, like a maybe good strategic use of your privilege. Like, obviously in this situation, it worked out well, but then in any other situation, like, how many people would really, like, go to see the performer instead of, like, someone like Marilyn Monroe? that has this element of making it about themselves. But I guess if it works, then...
Yeah, I don't know. I quite like this example of allyship because what she's doing is using her fame and privilege as Marilyn Monroe, but she is quite literally passing the mic. Like, she's not, I mean, I would have a major problem if she said, well, I'll get up and do a duet with her every time, right? Or I'll somehow, like, or I'll open for her, or I'll something like that, which would involve furthering Marilyn's own, you know, sort of platform, or like put herself on the stage, or put, but sitting in the front row is just like, look, I'm going to be there to draw in whatever gawkers are going to come to see me. But I'm going to be sitting in the front row watching the stage, watching my friend perform, and give her a chance to be on stage and be discovered or be known or be appreciated for her art, and sit there quietly, basically, and be in service of like watching her and be an audience member for her. I think that's I think it's quite elegant, actually.
Yeah, I guess maybe like the best allies are the ones who don't like call themselves allies, and they because now the conversation is kind of like, you kind of self-proclaim yourself to be an ally, and then it just ends there, because that it's like the work is done. You are an ally by just saying you're an ally. So I guess maybe she walked the talk there.
Yeah, and I think, like you mentioned, the most important thing is that she didn't position herself as such or get any creds from it. And this is a story which is coming out only many years later, and in fact, like, recently a tweet about this was circulating about this. Otherwise, it's a really like story that most people don't even know. To take a different example and bring us back to the current context, what about sports people, American sports persons who kneel during the national anthem as a like support for Black Lives Matter? I think following Colin Kaepernick's example, Megan Rapinoe and a few other athletes actually did that. What about that? And then within that, the Indian cricket team also did something similar at, you know, one of the recent matches last year. So what would you say about something like that? Is that good allyship? All of those are very different contexts, of course. So I'm presuming we're going to talk about that.
Okay, the Indian cricket team thing was like a complete joke. And it was just, where did that even come from? And I mean, it was just very cringeworthy. Like kneeling along with Black athletes, I think it is maybe good allyship, because the reason why so when Black athletes kneel, they are demonized for kind of disrespecting the national anthem or symbols of nationalism. Even more because they are Black. But then when everyone else does it, then the meaning associated with kneeling is no longer something that is anti-national. I mean, that's a very Indian terminology, but like unpatriotic, basically. Like, but then I don't know. Then does that take away the power of the original protest? I don't know. So it's very confusing.
Yeah, see, I actually think it is a nice form of allyship, because it's standing in solidarity symbolically, but in a way that has been at times at great cost and great risk to the people taking the knee, right? They've faced severe like economic backlash. They've like lost sponsorships and endorsements. They've faced like a huge amount of like, you know, online trolling, backlash from their teams, owners of the team. So people who have done this in solidarity don't do it without facing consequences, right? So it's something that they do at great personal risk. And as you know, with Colin Kaepernick, it didn't work out very well for him when he sort of stood up. So I think it's a good, I think it's nice. I mean, I don't know that it's necessarily accomplishing much. I guess it did call attention to the issues in a certain way. But I think it's a nice form of allyship.
I think the debate somewhat continues over here, but if we talk about this in an Indian context, which the three of us at least as non-sports fans are much more familiar with, what about Deepika Padukone showing up to JNU at the time of the anti-NRCCA protest? Is that an example of good allyship?
That is solidarity, I think. I don't know if I would call that allyship, because allyship seems a lot more like trite compared to solidarity, because that was a very powerful moment where she just came and she was just silent. She didn't, there were no press. I mean, there was press, that's how we know, but it wasn't like she made a big deal out of it, she publicized it. And she was just, like, discreet. She was just there in the background. She didn't, like, come into the center and make it all about herself and give a speech or anything. She was just there and quiet. It was, like, a quiet presence to show that she is in solidarity. That was really nice. And even if... I don't know if you can measure the effects of such actions in any tangible sense, but it was still significant. And I think it is a lot more... deeper than allyship.
I agree. I thought it was great.
But I think that also raises an interesting question, right? Like, one question which did come up was that, like, a Deepika Padukone, I mean, subsequently, unfortunately, I don't think she's been able to take that kind of a stance on anything. And we saw the way in which she was punished for taking that stance, literally, right? In terms of the boycott Chhapak, like, after that, the right-wing boycotting the film's fate. You could say kind of suffered because of that. I personally know people who, in extended networks, who didn't watch the film because she went and stood at JNU. Again, the personal cost to her in terms of potentially there's a link in her being called by the NCP for consumption of drugs and all of that also. But I think it also raises the question of, like, who can go and show up in solidarity, right? Because I think there was this question about, oh, look at how Deepika Padukone is speaking up while none of the Khans or none of the big actors have the kind of courage that she does. But why can a Khan not go and stand there like that? Like, why can't a Shah Rukh Khan or a Salman Khan go there? Because they are Muslim celebrities, right? Even if they're much richer, much more powerful, automatically they don't have the same kind of protection that, like, a Savarna Hindu woman might. So I don't know if that also kind of raises that question of, like, who can go and stand in solidarity even when they come from the same strata and they come from the same sphere. I think it raises an interesting question, right? Like, and should that change or affect at all the way that we see these things?
Well, I mean, now we know for we know with certainty why they can't stand up publicly at something like that. Because the payback will be swift and it'll be brutal. So, I mean, I think we can't fault other people for their own internal decision-making about whether to be public allies. I think, like, this, the whole question of allyship, one of the reasons it's so flawed when we talk about allyship with celebrities or public figures is that we're talking about, on the one hand, not really respecting forms of allyship that center individuals, right? Privileged individuals. But at the on the other hand, we're having this conversation about, like, whether we can critique public figures for not taking a position in certain situations. And I think, like, it's a very delicate balance. If you're a public figure, you are a celebrity, you have, you know, your face is famous, your name is famous. How you use it to stand up for certain causes is a very delicate question that I think is quite different from the calculus that, you know, the cost-benefit analysis that a non-famous person goes through.
Okay. What about upper caste folks reading Annihilation of Caste by B.R. Ambedkar? Is that an example of good allyship? Is that even allyship?
No.
Congratulations, you read a book.
Especially, like, if we know that they did it, then they obviously did it for the optics. And I think, again, that's what allyship boils down to. A lot of the time, it's just optics, especially for people who are mild to moderately famous.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that you should do. But like you said, it's like the moment you posit it as good allyship, I think it's something that, say, for instance, I should do to understand my caste privilege, or I have done to try and understand my caste privilege. But it's not something that you should do to be a good ally. You know, I think it's just about how you position it that makes a difference, which again goes back to the problem with how we talk about allyship in general. And let's move to another example with that. What about brands using queerness or anti-racism in advertising?
Hate it. not allyship.
Yeah, it's just rainbow capitalism, or the analogous version of that.
Let's talk a little bit about, like, how did allyship become co-opted by corporates, right? How did this even become a thing, or, like, how did it become cool to come and say that, hey, we're, like, allies, or we support diversity and inclusion?
So I think it began at, like, corporate workplaces and even universities with, like, this whole diversity, equity and inclusion policies, like the HR policies. And it's important to note that those policies came into place, like, only after it became socially acceptable to say that you are firmly against racism, etc. and have any kind of thing on paper about it. But then that just became like this bureaucratic HR thing, and there's an article in The Cut that calls it the diversity, equity and inclusion industrial complex. They basically mean, like, it's just another way to corporatize woke policies, where you pay lip service to whatever you're claiming to be anti-racist or queer-friendly, but then you actually aren't in the way you function every day.
Yep. Okay, what about, speaking about this and a throwback to one of our popular episodes from last year on influencers, what about, controversial rather, to put it more aptly, what about big influencers promoting smaller marginalized influencers? Like either sharing, you know, reading lists, being like, go read this person's work, or being like, go follow this person to educate yourself about caste, or to educate yourself about queer rights. What about something like that? Do you think that that's good allyship?
I find that a bit patronizing, because it's like, who are you to say this, you know? And who are you to tell us what to do to be a good ally, and how do you know, and are you doing these things, and who's to say whether it works or not? Are you going to say it? Because you're not going to realize the effects of it. So it's just, again, really, it gives people a lot of social clout to do this stuff now, and that's why they do it. And I mean, maybe that's a very cynical view, but
yeah, I agree. I mean, I really don't like it because of the dynamic it creates. Almost like there's this beneficent social media, like, overlord who's, like, doling out scraps of, like, you know, followers and attention on, like, social media attention to these tiny little accounts. And it's just like, who do you think you are, right? And I don't buy for a second, like, mega account, tiny account, doesn't matter. I don't buy for a second that those relationships are a one-way street. Like, I think that the mega influencer is getting, like you said, just as much sort of clout and as much sort of like a reputational, you know, adrenaline hit by virtue of being able to show people, like, this is who I support, this is who I read, this is who I care about. It's just as important to them and their following and their standing and their, you know, position or whatever, and their career, as it is to the other person. So I don't like it at all. I find it quite icky.
It also ends up tokenizing people, I think, into, like, these things. It's like, you see these lists of influencers to follow, or people to follow for knowing more about caste. And then it's like these people are, like, the representatives of caste, anti-caste politics, basically. And then the people to follow if you want to know more about queer politics, and then it's just like assigning these, I don't know, it just, there's something very yuck about that.
Yeah, and I think it limits everyone's understanding, right? Like, I think, again, I don't know, it's one of my favorite things on television, but, like, Montague TV from Atlanta season one, really, like, Donald Glover really captured it well there, where it showed, like, the problem with making one person from one community, like, the representative of how that dynamic, that power dynamic works. It's so problematic, and you see it time and again, right? Like, those few accounts or those few people are never going to be able to explain an entire dynamic or even represent that. But I want, like, this brings up an interesting question about, and something that I think you'd kind of brought up before as well, Rohita, when you were talking about the difference between allyship and solidarity and why you saw what Deepika Padukone did as, like, solidarity. But where does the idea of allyship itself come from, right? And like y'all pointed out, that the mega influencers are gaining something by saying that, hey, here's me curating this list on, you know, anti-caste influencers or activists to follow online. Is it actually about respecting and educating and creating a more aware environment and people, or is it more about like virtue signaling?
I think it goes back to something that Carla pointed out earlier about how it's too much about the individual. And like in any kind of social justice movement or politics, the moment you start centering the individual, you've already lost, I think, because all of these things are so collective and they involve mobilizing in large numbers and actually doing something to change the status quo. But I think allyship became a big buzzword after the 2020 Black Lives Matter protests, I think, after the death of George Floyd, where it just became so meaningless because there were Democrats in Congress taking the knee, and then even like police officers taking the knee and calling themselves allies, and then everybody on social media was like, here are the steps you can take to be an ally. It's like a how-to guide, and there's like point number one, do this, point number two, do this. And then there's even like this article in like the Harvard Business Review, of course, on how to be a good ally. And the first point is educate yourself. And then this is their idea of like a good question to ask somebody at your workplace, okay? It says, I'm curious about the things women / people of color / women of color in this organization find most challenging day to day. Things that I might not notice. Would you feel comfortable sharing some of what you encounter? And that's supposed to be like educating yourself and being a good ally. But what is happening there? Like, it's just you're asking people to share their lived experiences with you, and then what is going to happen? Like, are you going to swoop in and do something? Like, I don't know. It's just horrible. It's such a icky dynamic.
Yeah, and it also, like, I've always hated that, you know, when people expect you to like emote in like a forced way, right? It's such an inorganic way of asking somebody to share what might actually be something extremely painful and difficult for them on a daily basis. And to me, it feels so insensitive to try to like sit somebody down and tell and like, you know, stare into their eyes and say, so tell me about this difficult experience that you have. It's like, why would someone want to tell you that if you ask like that, right? That's not the way to do it in a professional environment. That's not the way to actually serve the needs of a community that may be feeling isolated and marginalized in a workplace. It just doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, and there's this whole, like, I mean, if you break down what allyship entails, like, according to all of these articles that detail all the steps involved in becoming an ally, one is educate yourself, and the other thing is check your privilege. And then, like, it sounded good at first, but then at some point it became like, okay, so what next? Is it just people sitting and feeling this self-indulgent guilt about their privilege and then calling themselves allies after that, or are we actually doing something? Because I don't know. Even that is just like really centered around the individual at the end of the day. And not just any individual. It's like the privileged individual in this binary, which I'm sure is also problematic to make it that kind of binary. But yeah.
Okay. I just had this flash where I remembered this tweet I read where somebody was sort of recalling an event where they saw a great male ally in the workplace. And this is one of the most like basic sort of like old school forms of sexism in a workplace. But basically what she recounted is like, there's like a boardroom setting, you know, like a conference room setting. And there's a bunch of people, men and women, sitting together in this office. And a young man, or let's call him like mid-level in the organization, like relatively senior in this meeting, at some point when the meeting's about to begin, and I suppose he has noticed that every time they sit down, the big boss, who's a man, asks one of the young women in the room to take notes, right? And so before the big boss has a chance to ask one of the young women in the room to take notes, this mid-level guy steps up and says, I'm going to take the notes today. That's it. Plain and simple. Just, he saw it. He recognized it. He saw that it was not right. And he just stepped in to like intercept it and try to change the dynamic of the situation and sort of break this bad, you know, this sort of bad habit that had been there that was clearly, you know, grossly sexist. So something like that is a small, you know, just a small token gesture. But as long as the person doesn't go around now calling himself an ally around everywhere, you know, because of that one gesture, I think it's nice. Small things like that can actually begin to change the fabric of an organization and can make people feel more included and supported. Again, as long as it doesn't become something that the person then goes around and trumpets.
That's an interesting example that you bring up, Carla. I'm still thinking about it because, like, you're absolutely right. Like, those small acts make a big difference. But I just keep going back to that idea of, like, who is able to be a good ally and by extension a good person? And can someone who's actually from that marginalized community ever be good in that way? You know what I mean? Like, a man might always get those brownie points for doing something like that. While when I, as a woman, say, hey, you know, that's unfair that you're... might stand up and say that, why are you only asking us to take the notes? You know, everybody will be like, oh, there she goes again. Like, this is not sexism. I was just saying it because you're the youngest person in the room. You know, so I feel like it also introduces this dynamic of like, hey, the oppressor can actually become like a good person by like, quote unquote, doing these things. While if I have to, in situations where I'm being discriminated against, call out something, I will by default always be the person who's like, pissing you off or being angry or being unpleasant. I don't know, just thinking out loud.
I don't know, Shristi. I think that actually if we're thinking about, you know, what makes for good allyship, one example, I feel, is somebody who quietly, without expecting any sort of accolades for it or without labeling themselves an ally or whatever, quietly steps in a situation where the consequences for the marginalized person to stand up on their own and like fight for something will be more dire. And that person can just quietly step in and like make the situation more comfortable for them and not ask for anything in return. I think that that's an example of like a nice form of allyship.
And what do we extend this to something like, you know, men supporting the Me Too movement online? Like if there's a Twitter thread, you'd kind of re-up it and say something like, time to listen, or this is horrifying, or, you know, even if we go a step further with something like he for she campaign or something like men against rape and discrimination, which, you know, translates to Mard by Farhan Akhtar. What about initiatives like these where there is, you know, arguably publicity around it, you're signing up and saying that I am this person who believes in this and wants to do this. What about movements like these? Like, do you think those are important and those help in that way? Or, you know, are they exactly an example of what we've now broken down as getting brownie points for being an ally while actually not changing things too much?
That last thing you said, I feel they're exactly the thing that we've said actually has the patina of inauthenticity to it because it centers the wrong person. Frankly, like, you know, I almost feel sorry that we spent this much time talking about the man note taker because he doesn't deserve that much airtime. My point was only that like solidarity can be comprised of gestures large and small, and sometimes small gestures can be very meaningful for people if they make them feel more included and more comfortable. But these grand gestures supported by multiple PR teams and whatever, where the center of the conversation is actually someone highly privileged who's not even from the marginalized community you're trying to call attention to, that I can't call that an example of good allyship.
Yeah, I guess I agree. And I guess it boils down to like this question of if you can't tell people that you're an ally or in some way show it, then are you really an ally? And that's some, like, a lot of people feel like they are not allies if they don't like wear it, like literally wear, stamp it on their forehead and call themselves an ally. So yeah, I guess the note-taking man is probably a good example of this, but again, I hate how he's, I brought him up again, but yeah.
So, I mean, on that note, that kind of brings us to the end of all of our examples, and we've sort of ended up unpacking what the idea of allyship is and what our problems with it are. So finally, to end this, like, what are your final thoughts on, like, allyship and on the idea of good allies? Like, if there's one thing that you'd want to leave this podcast with, or one note that you've actually thought through the course of our various examples, what is it?
I think for me, like, what I realized through this podcast is, like, this whole thing about how willing are you to give up something or sacrifice something or step down or basically give up some of the privilege that you hold in some way.
Yeah, I have a feeling, I mean, we're already in this episode definitely, like, rolling our eyes a little at this term. And I think within a few years, this is going to be one of those cultural terms that, like, we all collectively roll our eyes at because it seems so silly and meaningless. It's basically like once you've felt the need to, like, call yourself an ally, you're clearly not one in any, like, authentic sense of the term. I think you pointed that out, Rohita.
Yep, I think I'm changing my stance because, like, yeah, I think solidarity is what matters. The moment you have to say you're something, you're not really that thing. Or you defeat the purpose of that thing. And on that note, for anyone who thought this episode was about allyship in war, we're really sorry to disappoint. And this is to let you know that this is not about that.
In case you couldn't tell.
In case you couldn't tell. If you couldn't, this is probably the wrong podcast. You should not have listened up till this point. Okay. And we will not see you next time, but everybody else, see you again next time.
All the other allies out there.